From the heart of rural America, Mount Marty University Nursing presents Health on the Map, a podcast that looks closely at challenges in rural healthcare through in-depth conversations with experts in the field. From accessibility concerns to chronic health conditions, Health on the Map host Mark Long invites advanced practitioners, policymakers, educators, and students on air to uncover the gaps, challenges, and opportunities our rural communities face, including what's being done to make a difference. Join us as we chart the impacts of people working to put rural healthcare on the map.
Welcome to Health on the Map. I'm your host, Mark Long. Our first guest is Dr. Chris Yednak, a noted researcher and board-certified nurse practitioner with a background in endocrine conditions. Dr. Yednak has authored nearly 40 peer-reviewed journal articles and 16 book chapters during her career and has co-edited the only endocrinology textbook for advanced practice nursing. She co-founded the Federation of International Nurses in Endocrinology and served as president of both that organization and the Endocrine Nurses Society in the United States. Dr. Yednak earned her doctorate in nursing practice from Oregon Health and Science University and currently serves as the endocrinology program director at Mount Marty University. Dr. Yednak, welcome. Let's start with the basics. Can you describe what diabetes is and the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes?
Certainly. Well, thank you for inviting me. Diabetes is a complex disease, but it's really the result of the pancreas not doing its job properly. So its job is to produce insulin. And insulin is really a hormone that is produced once we eat, and particularly when we eat foods with sugar, a specific sugar called glucose. The insulin actually then picks up that glucose and it transports it into all the body cells, and that really powers the cells, so it gives the cells energy. But when there's not enough insulin, that glucose just builds up in the blood. And so it's not being used by the cells. So then the kidneys have to work kind of hard because they've got to get rid of all that extra glucose. And so the person with diabetes actually urinates a lot, and hence it got its name. And the name we call it is diabetes mellitus or mellitus, depending on where you are in the country or what country. And that is actually derived from the word diabetes is derived from the Greek, and it means siphon or to pass through, which is what happens with a lot of the glucose. Mellitus is actually a Latin word that means sweet. And if you can believe it, years ago, doctors and nurses actually had to taste urine, because it was a sweet taste. And that was diagnostic for diabetes. And that was, luckily, after that, we developed test strips and gave up tasting urine. So...
For sure. I'm very thankful for modern medicine and that healthcare providers don't have to do that anymore.
We are very grateful, believe me. So,
yeah. And the differences between type 1 and type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, type 1 diabetes is really more often a disease where the pancreas genetically doesn't do its job. It can't do its job. So often that's diagnosed really early in life, in childhood, but there's actually now diagnosis of that type of diabetes later in life as well. Type 2 is most common. So 90 to 95% of diabetes is type 2. And type 2 is really an issue of the pancreas not making enough insulin, or the body is kind of resistant to that insulin, so it's not allowing it to do its job very well. And there's a number of reasons for that.
Great. Thank you. Interesting. So 90% is type 2. And I know, according to the CDC, that in 1980, about 6 million Americans had diabetes. That number has now grown to more than 38 million. So a sixfold increase in the last 45 years or so.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right now, apparently more than 50% of American adults either have diabetes or pre-diabetes. Why do you think that prevalence has grown so much during that time?
I think there's a number of reasons. And certainly, you know, that figure actually may be a lot higher than that, because those are the people that we know, you know, have the propensity for it. But those people that are undiagnosed, that figure may be more in the 40 million range. So But lifestyle, because of the type of diabetes we're talking about, type 2 in particular, lifestyle is kind of a big issue. Since around the 1950s, right, we are more sedentary and TV is more prominent. Computers have kind of taken charge of our lives, video games for kids. A lot of people are working desk jobs. The other issue, I think, is we're all running busy lives. And so we're trying to do a lot with a short time, including raise children, take children to sports activities, et cetera. So fast foods have become really a choice and very available in most places. And then in the supermarkets, we have a lot of over-processed foods. So those foods both have a propensity for people to gain weight. Also, we're exposed to more environmental toxins, and particularly things like endocrine disruptors we've been talking a lot more about lately that are in plastics and the food we eat and in the stuff that we use for cooking, et cetera. So we also have better diagnostic tools, so we can recognize diabetes earlier now. And the other factor really is we're living longer, and because we're living longer, there's a higher likelihood that we're going to develop diabetes in the long run.
Great. Thanks. So there's some, you know, we at Mount Marty University focus a lot on rural health, and there's some research that shows that residents in rural areas are more likely to die from diabetes than those in suburban and even urban areas. Why do you think that is?
No, I think it's very true. And a lot of the data that I've been seeing is saying very similar concerns, expressing similar concerns. There's about a 17% higher risk of diabetes if you live in a rural area. Multiple reasons, again. Sadly, in urban areas, we actually see a decrease in diabetes, but not so in rural areas. So we know that there's a higher poverty rate in rural areas. We also know that access is very limited in rural areas to healthcare, but also to good foods. And we'll talk about that also in a minute. But there's an increased chance of being overweight in a rural area versus an urban area. Higher blood pressure, higher cholesterol levels. Physical inactivity is actually higher in rural areas, which I thought was very interesting. But there's some studies that have shown very clearly that there's less activity in people in rural areas than in urban areas, whether that's related to the need to jog or, you know, the kinds of access to gyms, et cetera, that you see in an urban area. I don't know.
Interesting. You know, I grew up on a farm, and so I sort of think rural areas, a lot of farms and ranches, and that people are out working and doing things and they're active. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's not always the case. You think of small towns and even, you know, people who have acreages, maybe doing their riding lawnmowers and things like that. They're just not as active as perhaps they used to be.
And I think the other thing is, and there's some good data now in terms of exposure to pesticides. And those people that are in rural areas are more likely because of spraying or the use of pest controls in crops. They're more likely to be exposed, and that actually can increase that propensity for diabetes. And then, of course, access to care and evaluation. We should be evaluating people more in rural areas, and yet it's very difficult to get people to specialty care or even to access to primary care just because of transportation issues, again, and poverty, et cetera. So,
yeah, interesting. And we'll talk about the program that you run at Mount Marty University, which is sort of hopefully helping us in that area with providers. But you mentioned food. And so I want to double back to that and your comment about processed food. Let's talk a little bit about food deserts. Can you maybe describe what they are and why they have a significant impact on rural health in general and diabetes in particular?
Mm-hmm. No, sure. By definition, it's an area that lacks affordable or adequate supply of things like fresh fruits, vegetables, grains, milk, etc., or very nutritious types of food. I think it can also be related to individuals and families. So some families live in very food insecure environments, both because of economics, but also there's a sparse population in rural regions. And so for a lot of retail stores, it's just uneconomic to have a store that's at least accessible to the majority of people that are living in rural areas. And so if people have to travel a long way to get to a store and they're low income, they're less likely to do it. And so they may go to like the local gas station, or it may be that they're buying fast food because fast food seems to be much more available even in rural areas. So I think that's a big issue, sadly.
Yeah, for sure. So the good news is that diabetes can usually be managed. The bad news is that there aren't a lot of providers out there who have a depth of knowledge about diabetes. We talk about endocrinologists, which are the physicians who manage endocrine disorders, including diabetes, most often. And there aren't a lot of them out there, interestingly enough. In South Dakota, where Mount Marty is, endocrinologists only exist in Sioux Falls and Rapid City. You've spent so much of your career focused on the treatment of endocrine disorders from an advanced nursing practice perspective. Can you talk about the role of nurse practitioners in working with patients and other providers in managing all sorts of endocrine disorders, such as diabetes, thyroid disease, and other conditions?
Sure. Yeah, no, it's very true that, unfortunately, people aren't going into endocrinology as frequently as they used to. And I think there's, again, a number of reasons for that. But generally, I think in rural areas, specialists don't tend to congregate in those areas. They tend to go to more centers that have bigger academic practices. And there's also, again, the same issue in rural areas where it's difficult to maintain a practice just because, again, you don't have that population to be able to maintain a viable practice, particularly in a specialty arena. Recently, the stats show that there's about one physician endocrinologist to about 37,000 people in the U.S. Now, that is including urban areas. And so that figure is going to be significantly higher in the rural area because, again, there's a gravitation towards that practice within an urban area. So nurse practitioners, I think a lot of us will go into this profession, and it really is the fastest growing profession. We're more likely to work in a rural area, and I think there's a bunch of different reasons for that. And in a lot of states now, there's full practice authority. So that means that a nurse practitioner working in a rural area is autonomous. And so they often want to practice where they live. And nurse practitioners generally focus on prevention. And particularly in pediatrics, and when you look at the distribution, again, of endocrinologists, there are at least three states in the union that do not have a pediatric endocrinologist.
Mm, wow.
And I think it's really important as we start to work with families and educate them, which is typically, again, what nurse practitioners do. They focus on the family. They focus on the patient and their environment. And so teaching a family how to effectively develop a good dietary regime in a family is important, because then you can start to prevent obesity and the food desert issues within that family. So we look at lifestyle, we look at interventions that prioritize a healthy lifestyle and education around that. And it's really patient-centered. I think you know, when you look at nursing, nursing was founded on Benedictine principles, and it's really focused on healthcare and focused on the patient. And so what we try to do then is to solve the patient's healthcare problems as a partnership. So giving the patient the knowledge and the skills and the resources to be able to develop a lifelong care, healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Mount Marty University is a Catholic Benedictine institution, and it's a focus on community. And as even St. Benedict says in his rule, the care of the sick is very important. And so it dovetails perfectly with what we do with nursing. Let's pivot to our new endocrinology program at Mount Marty University. Can you discuss the certificate that we have and the knowledge that you hope nurse practitioners who complete the program, the impact they have on care?
I think it's very exciting. It's really developed out of a need in the rural area, but also an increasing need in primary care for endocrine knowledge, because as we talked about before, there's this shrinking population of endocrinologists. And so a lot of that care has been absorbed by primary care providers, and nurse practitioners are trained as primary care providers. And so it's an extremely important move, I think, when we look at basic training in terms of nurse practitioners and certificates. There's so much to cover in a short time that, and as knowledge expands, we don't have enough in-depth information. And so when we're talking about this sudden burgeoning increase in diabetes, for example, but also thyroid, bone, cardiac, et cetera, these all relate to what the physician endocrinologists then refer back to primary care. And so this is a gap that Mount Marty is filling with a subspecialty in terms of endocrinology for the primary provider, so that they can be more effective in treating these patients and feeling like they can actually address their needs.
Yeah, it's exciting. And we've gotten a lot of good feedback from the healthcare community in the upper Midwest and elsewhere. And I know the first cohort of these practicing nurse practitioners who have already been in practice, several of them for years, they've come back and they've decided to go back to school in this online program. What have you learned from those six as you have started this new certificate program?
I think from it's seeing them rediscover the joy of learning, I think is number one. Because when you think about going back as an older adult, back to school again, it's a little daunting. And so trying to juggle a practice, because all of these students are working full-time, and trying to juggle that with there's a clinical component as well as a didactic component for this session, but they are so motivated and they're so determined to fill that gap in for the needs of their patients that they're willing to make those sacrifices. And every week, I think, we discover something new, and how, as they're bringing cases to discuss and asking questions, they're understanding a lot more about the background for endocrine patients and how best to manage them. So it's been a very exciting development, and I'm looking forward to this continuing, and we're only in the end of the first semester, so we have a lot more to share together, but we're basically learning together as well. I think it's been a great experience.
Which is usually the best learning environment, and I know that there are several other nurse practitioners who have sought out the university and inquired about the program. So
Indeed.
It looks like it has an exciting future.
Yes, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, the final question. You spent years on the staff of a pituitary center at Oregon Health and Sciences University, working on other endocrine conditions. It's sort of fascinating. I mean, if people know anything at all about the pituitary gland, they know it's in your head, but many people don't know what it is or what it does. Can you talk a little bit about your rewarding work in that area?
Yeah, you know, certainly. The pituitary is really the master gland of the body. It really directs a lot of the end organ functions throughout our body. So if there's an issue with the pituitary gland, then there's some significant health issues down the line. So looking at, and there's a number of reasons, again, for that to occur. For the most part, pituitary disease occurs later in life, either because there's a tumor or because there's been some environmental issue that's damaged the pituitary and its function. So, but what I find is, number one, you're right, people don't really know about the pituitary. It's not something, sadly, that has a lot of exposure in basic training. And so I think we all are learning more about pituitary diseases, and paying a little bit more attention to that, I think, in primary care is really important. But for me personally, it's a long-term relationship and partnership with my patients that I value. We problem solve their health challenges and their health journey, you know, through all the challenges of life and through all the life transitions. And that's been very rewarding in itself, and seeing people just to be able to achieve or maximize their potential for a good quality of life is extremely rewarding. And particularly in the context of the long-term endocrine disorders that a lot of these people suffer. So I think it's more prevalent again than what we realize. We know that a number of people have pituitary tumors, and most of them actually are not a problem. But we also know that people that experience traumas, like through wars and head injuries, can also develop pituitary diseases, and some medications now affect pituitary function, particularly some medications for cancers. And so being able to address these and help the patient get back to a stable quality of life is very rewarding.
Yeah, that's great. Well, wonderful. Thank you for that work. And I just realized, as a non-healthcare provider or practitioner, just how rewarding maybe being in this endocrine environment is, because unlike orthopedic surgery, where you're replacing a hip and then moving on, you do get a chance to develop a relationship with patients on these chronic diseases.
Indeed. No, it's very dynamic, I think, and that's the important thing. Diabetes is dynamic, and it changes from day to day. It changes from life transitions, you know, through childhood, adulthood, marriage, pregnancy. So it's rewarding to be able to work with patients to meet the barriers, to meet the hurdles, to jump the hurdles, and then to be able to manage their health journey themselves.
That's great. Dr. Chris Yednak, anything else I should have asked?
No, I think we've covered a lot, and I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you very much. I think, you know, it's important to continue to screen, and if people are concerned that they have diabetes, I think they need to seek that screening. And then whether it's a lifestyle or whether it's potentially a genetic issue, we can treat it.
For sure. Thank you so much, Dr. Yednak, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Health on the Map is a production of Mount Marty University Nursing in cooperation with Riverfront Broadcasting. To learn more about Mount Marty, South Dakota's Catholic University, visit mountmarty.edu/nursing.